on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
It's The Big Fish and fishing musician Dorian Mode. Welcome back. Oh, hang on, I'll get my harp. What key are you in there?
You got your harp there. Oh, great. I don't know, the G.
All right.
G for good. Four.
I had it upside down there for a while.
Yeah. I had the piano upside down.
Hey, that's pretty good fun. Good way to warm up on a Saturday morning with the fishing musician or musician fisherman.
Yes, fisherman.
Dr. Mishiman. Dr. Dorian Mode, who's well known to Simon Marnie's audience.
Yes.
Good fun. Dorian, you have a lot of fun with Simon as well, and you've got a lot in common. He loves eating fish.
Yes.
But you love catching fish.
I love catching fish. Yeah, I am a fishing tragic, as you are. We've been out fishing many times. We've been away fishing many times. And, we've got to get on the crabs. That's the next
thing. We have. It's been a good season for the crabs, and I've got a couple of old mullet in the freezer that are ready to go for you. You don't mind getting your hands dirty?
No, I don't.
I saw a thing the other day on social media is great in the right hands. It's an awful tool when the trolls, and I don't mean putting
fishing trolls
lures out and driving along at six knots.
Like my song.
Yeah, troll, exactly. And we're going to hear a great song about a lovelorn fisherman who turned his tinny into a love machine.
A gondola.
Yeah. A gondola. A gondola. Emphasis on being on the doll.
Yeah.
But it's a good story. It's a good story. A bit of fun at the expense of our listeners in Brisbane Water, but the Woiwoians.
We've got to change that name. Brisbane Water is so confusing, isn't it?
It is.
You know, Governor no Brisbane, he probably never even came here. You know, like, what are we? It should be just called, I don't know, Darkinjung Waters or something.
Something like that. Mm. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But this idea of combining fishing and music is something that you do well, and you're at the moment converting an old putt-putt boat to the modern era. This is a great story, and we'll do it in more depth down the track when you've worked out the red wire goes to the...
Almost there, yeah. Convert, just a very brief, I won't go into it, but I've had two Motor Cs, Scott. I've had a petrol old simplex Motor Cs on me, then I've had the diesel Motor Cs on me, and so a bloke said, why don't you go electric? I never thought about that. So I've bought an old golf cart motor off at Gumtree, and I've installed it. It works, but it's we've just got to figure out how to... We're just a couple little things, but I'll come back and talk about that in detail.
So if you see a guy charging down the Hawkesbury yelling, four! You know, wearing... played pants.
I just can't get out of the bunker.
Shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but once you get it
but
going.
It'll be deadly for trolling, talking about trolls, internet trolls. It'll be deadly for trolling because you can set it at that speed. With electric motors, you can go at that really great speed and the fish can't hear you.
No,
so you're not
great
scaring
for
fish.
when the tailor move into our local waters.
So you and me will go out and we'll give it a
be
crack.
Good fun, absolutely. That's a story for another time on The Big Fish. But you're working on a new show. It's a very interesting show. It's a show in progress.
Well, I think as an artist, you know, like I've been a jazz musician all my life, and you know, you're singing about New York and Georgia and Georgia, you know, Georgia. And I've never been to Georgia, Scott. And I'm thinking, why am I singing about Georgia? I live on the Central Coast. So I've developed a show called Budgie Woy Variations. And it's all just little songs, sort of written in the sort of Randy Newman kind of jazz style. It's all about little people on the Central Coast, little stories I've picked up along the way. A lot of stories from my fishing club. I think I've played one or two
Blackfish Lynn was one we
Blackfish
played.
Blackfish Lynn we
The fisherwoman who had the secret weed.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
right.
And the confusion about that weed when her husband thought she was actually a drug dealer.
Yeah, but it was all very innocent, Scott.
It all worked out in the end.
She was selling weed to Blackfish.
Yes, fishermen. That's right. Yeah. It was the green weed.
The funny story about
aquatic,
that is...
Aquatic weed.
The real person I wrote that about said, there's only a one problem I have with that song is that you changed my name. I want my real name back in the song.
Great.
I never anticipated that.
What was the other one we did?
Get Along to Edalong.
About the bloke who, the fisherman who thought his missus would love a date. Yeah.
Yeah. That
get along to Edalong. That's a good song. We might even play that.
We'll play it
because okay. We had Phoebe on the violin.
Yeah, that's right.
We had Morgan on the guitar.
She was nursing a baby on a hip.
So you'll hear the baby crying in this. Let's play that because that's a great one about a fish. Because if your partner doesn't fish, and there are a lot of women who fish on this show who have male partners who don't fish.
That's right.
But if you don't have that mutual love of it, then it's just like pearls in front of swine. You don't try to convert them. You don't try to mansplain it, and this is what this bloke was doing in this song.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that song was really I wrote about a bloke who had a friendship in Sydney with another bloke, and he's living on the Central Coast now. He says, "Look, come up and we'll go fishing." And because he says, "I'm coming up to Edalong. What's there to do in Edalong?" He says, "Well, we'll go fishing, of course. What else would we do?" He says, "Oh, I can't do that. I'm a vegan, you know, all this sort of stuff." And it's like the guy's like, "Well, what else?" He said, "Well, aren't there any sort of art galleries or any kind of jazz clubs or anything?" He says, no. What about museums? Well, there's the Dinosaur Park at Somersby. You know, that's kind of a museum to dinosaurs. And he says, well, what about, you know, is there any sort of, like, nightclubs? Well, there's the over 50s disco at the Edalong Memorial Club. So, you know, if your partner's not into fishing, it's really hard to kind of get a leave pass and sort of spend the whole day fishing because you're coming out for the weekend to spend time with your partner. So I kind of get that, you know. So that song's sort of about, coming to Edalong.
Well, let's have a listen to the version with the violin and guitar, a harmonica, and, of course, Dorian on piano. On the Big Fish.
Where's your harp?
Oh, yeah. What key are we in, baby?
You're in B-flat.
Always.
This is a setup, folks.
Here we go.
Get along to Edalong, see you on a Saturday night. Get along to Edalong, everything will be alright. Hook a whiting and a brim or two, cook a flathead on the barbecue. Oh, get along to Edalong. Dewey and a gar as well, and down a scooey at the RSL. Get along to Edalong, see you on a Saturday night. We've got lawn bowls and bingo too, and over 50s disco for a boogaloo. Or meet me at the jetty at 8:45 to feel a tap, tap, tap off your line. Get along to Edalong. But handles, you can hire a boat. Hook a mullet on a bobby float. Get along. Meet you on a Saturday night. Brother Scott! Seven Phoebe. Yeehaw! got lawn bowls and bingo too, and over 50s disco for a boogaloo. Or meet me at the jetty at a 8:45 and feel a tap, tap, tap on your inside. Get along to get along. But handles you can hire a boat. Hook a mullet on a bobby float. Get along to get along. Meet you on a Saturday night. Meet you on a Saturday night. Meet you on a Saturday night. But I'm a vegan.
It's the Big Fish and some beautiful tuners this morning from the maestro Dorian Mode, who writes great songs, humorous songs about fishing and observing fisher folk. You had a lot of fun at your local fishing club just listening to the lingo. I think a lot of into your books and things.
I just get the best stories. Like the other day, a bloke from Saratoga said to me, he said, I'm a triathlete. And I looked at this bloke and I thought, man, he looks like a wreck. I can't believe he's a triathlete. He said, I said, well, talk me through your training, you know. And he said, well, I jog to the Davo RSL. I have a scotch and a cigarette. Triathlete.
Three things. That's it. Three events.
I mean, where are you going to hear someone say that to you?
That's great. Yeah. That's great
That's
fun.
That's so funny. So I don't know. I just kind of get all these stories and ideas from, you know, chatting with people and but I think as an artist,
and we think our tinnies are you know, they're machines that women would be interested in, and vice versa. We've been talking to a lot of women who are, you know, love their boats, but if your partner is not interested, you know, it's a very uncomfortable. They want to go on a luxury cruise. They don't want to sit on the hard aluminium seat,
that's right,
reeking of mullet gut. Yeah. Trying to lure a crab on the end of your hook.
But see, this bloke in this song I've written called the Woy Woy Waltz Waltz, right? He thinks that's the most romantic thing you can do. Like, his idea of a romantic night out is like crabbing, you know, or, you know, trolling for flathead or tailor, or, you know, like, he thinks that's the most romantic thing you could possibly do. He doesn't get that maybe this girl's not that into it, you know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't she be? But, you know, obviously he's got another idea. So his idea of romance is not hers. Now, Scott, you and I have seen this documentary called the...
Woy Woy, Venice of the South.
That's it.
It was done in 1930s, back 36, post-depression, I think. I'm reading some of the history about it. It's
Big
brilliant.
Fish listeners can Google it.
Yeah, some local filmmakers rediscovered it and fixed it up. And it's just fantastic. It really is very, very good. It's got that old style sort of... they might be able to play a little bit of it here, actually. Just bear with us. But it's called Australian Romantic Journey, Woy Woy, and the Venice of the South. Let's see if we can have a little listen to some of it. So here it is, courtesy of the National Film Archive.
Hello, everybody. The Aboriginal translation of the words woy woy is water here, water there, more water there, and more water. The express crossing the Hawkesbury River Bridge brings us to Woy Woy, which is about 45 miles from Sydney by rail. My little niece, Sally, was very excited over the prospect of her holidays. And on our arrival, we were met by some very charming friends who had arranged for us to leave right away and see the sights. Oh, hello, Sally. By Jove, what a big girl you've grown. Looking so pretty, too. The station overlooks Woy Woy Bay, and this is one of the favorite spots for the ambitious visitor to start their fishing careers. And the nice thing about it here is you don't have to be all dressed up. Just a bathing suit, and doesn't Sally know it, too.
Dorian Mode, it's from the National Studios, Pagewood, 1936, and that courtesy of the National Film and Sound Archive in Canberra.
And available on YouTube. You can check it out.
Yeah, you can jump on YouTube and have a look at that. And it's inspired this song because it starts with a waltz and it really got you thinking.
I didn't realise that, though, because just listening to it again now, I realise that there's a waltz behind the commentary, the very British-affected commentary.
Yes, here we are in my way.
Yeah, rolling the R's. Very Noel Coward, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it inspired this song. Now, you have to imagine, Scott, that our man has got his gondola with a really long pole. And he's singing this song as he's got
poling along.
So this is called the Woy Woy Waltz Waltz. Call me mad, a wanderer in my aluminium gondola. According to Dennis, our Woy Woy's the Venice of Sydney. And if at all your boy fatigues, we'll shout you a shardy at Woy Woy Leagues. You'll play some Keno and suck on some vino all evening. Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why, why did I woo you in Woy Woy? Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Woy Woy? If you're shy or insecure, we'll wet a line, we'll flick a lure. We'll watch some cricket, buy us a ticket in the meat tray. We'll waltz along the moonlit shore, a dance of love forevermore. The Bayview, I'll save you a seat and we'll meet in the bingo. Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Hawaii? Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Woy Woy? Then you stumped me, you went and dumped me, not before poaching my fags. Beware, betray, we won the meat tray, you left me broken with a kilo of snags. I'll flood your work with daffodils. Do you still clean cheap motels? I'll be nice and leave notes on your Dyson with chockies and tulips. A fisher's wharf a fella can feed a lazy pelican and dream of you smiling, your face so beguiling with true lips. Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Hawaii? Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Woy Woy? Since you left me all alone, block me on your mobile phone. I sit here wishing that you're with me fishing or sooner. I've got some worms, a stinking prawn. I'll sit here thinking until the dawn. Your smile was so pretty with a $10 schnitty and schooner. Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you in Hawaii? Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you at all? Woy Woy, Woy Woy, why did I woo you at all?
Ah, oh, brilliant stuff, The Big Fish. Dorian Mode, who was inspired by a beautiful old film from 1936. I'm just reading a bit of history about that film too. Mm. It was produced by the Woy Woy Council at the time because Newcastle Council had done one to lure tourists from Sydney because people after the Depression were becoming more mobile and jumping on the train for holidays.
That's right.
We had those railway hotels up in the Blue Mountains that you've been to, you know, as well. The beautiful one at
Carrington and
the Carrington, and the one overlooking the Megalong, the Hydro Majestic, of course.
Well, I live in the Fibro Majestic,
so they thought, well, Newcastle are doing this, but this piece I'm reading here is very interesting. They've spoken to Jeff Potter, the librarian with the current Central Coast Council and Gosford Council, talking about why it was produced, because they thought, well, you know, we've got to stop them from all going to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
The Woi Woi is the Venice of the South. And,
that's right.
Well, it's all surrounded by water, isn't it? I mean,
and you know what? I was thinking about it driving here today to the studio, is that it was before the Gold Coast and Sylvania Waters and all of those man-made canals. So, you know, it was at a time where it was really just a natural waterway. Because when they talk about Woi Woi, they're also talking about Edelong, aren't they, Scott? And,
they
and
are,
and the kind of that whole area around there. Mm. So
it's very low. I mean, you know, when there's a high tide on
that's right.
It does turn into a bit of a Venice. Yeah, it comes up through the guttering and through the roads. I mean,
although I challenge you that Fisher's Wharf is not quite St Mark's Square. It doesn't have the romance of
certainly doesn't have as many pigeons, and I don't. We have the glass blowers.
We've got the pelicans, though.
Venetian glass blowers, but yeah, we do have it. Reading some of the histories is rather interesting from this site that I was looking at, Escape magazine online, and Jeff Potter's quoted there along with other local historians, and they're talking about Fleming, the fellow who did the voiceover too. He's a film star of the day, a fellow by the name of Claude Fleming, who was sort of like a local handsome fellow from the talkies.
Yeah, right, the talkies. Do the voice, Scott, you can do it.
Leisure boats are everywhere, filled with happy people enjoying themselves.
Oh, that's good.
Very Stephen Toast,
isn't
it?
Very good. That's a show we really like, Toast, isn't it?
So we see the Memorial Park, the bowling club, Edelong Beach, and lots of fishing and lots of people.
Yeah, I think one of those fish was quite dead on the end of the line.
Then they look a bit closer at it. As for Woi Woi's saucy side at this time, Mr. Potter, the local librarian and historian, couldn't confirm or deny rumours. He said, it's been said that many of Sydney's businessmen owned little cottages, holiday cottages, and brought their girlfriends up for the weekend. As I say, I have no proof, only vague stories, and who are we to judge? And he also spoke about the colourful identities from Sydney in that time in the 1930s.
Yeah, yeah.
He said Sydney's Razor Gang legends Kate Lee and Phil the Jew Jeffs frequented the area in the 1930s and 40s. Kate Lee was assaulted by Catherine Eichen at Woi Woi in 1931. Phil the Jew Jeffs, a famous gangster, lived in retirement in a very expensive home at Edelong before his death in 1945. So he hung up the razor and the SP booking
took up the bowls, the
drug
bowls.
Dealing, and went to Edelong to get out of the Sydney razor gang scene.
Yeah, right. Yeah, as you would.
As you would.
Yeah, and I've had enough of slashing people.
That's right. Lived to a ripe old age. Died in 1945. So there was a very interesting place, and obviously an easy trip on the train a world away from Sydney.
Yeah, and I think that was a time where, like, you could build a little fibro quite cheap. I mean, I live in one, you know, on the Central Coast.
A remnant of those days.
As I like to call it, Central Coast Tudor. it was just like, cheap houses that people could come up and have a holiday.
There are also a lot of boarding houses. You could tell someone, quote, I'm taking a girl to Woi Woi. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Everyone knew what was going on, Mr. Spillard said, who administrates the good old Woi Woi Facebook page, which is a brilliant Facebook page, has lots of great historic photos on that page.
Yeah.
He said there were lots of guest houses there, and it was a place where guys and girls could mix because there weren't many chaperones. The blokes could stay in a room and there'd be a girl next door.
How very Central Coast.
And there was a lot of drinking.
Yes. These are the ways of my people.
Two main hotels, the Bayview, which is still there. Beautiful.
It's in my song.
It's in your song. And the old Woi Woi Hotel, which is still there, which is, I think, a bit Tudor style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is right near, they're both near
there's
the water.
There's a great sign in the Woi Woi Hotel that has New York, Paris, Woi Woi, and there's three clocks. It's just really funny, like they've got the time zones.
And the Woi Woi Hotel was built from leftover bricks from the railway tunnel, where the famous fish fossils were found that are at the museum.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
They've left over bricks from that incredible work. And if you're there at Mullet Creek, you can see where
I love Mullet Creek.
The camp was on the Hawkesbury.
That's where it just comes out at Mullet Creek, isn't
it? Yeah, that's right. The tunnel comes out
there. I think that's one of the great train journeys of the world, Scott. Yeah.
Oh, look, it's been an absolute pleasure talking music and fishing with you again,
mate,
on The Big Fish, Dorian.
Thank you. And if you can come up to my gig at the Laycock Street Theatre, it's the 26th of April, Budgie Woi Variations, all little songs about the Central Coast. We need more songs about Central Coast, not Georgia and New York, Scott, but more songs about Budgie Woi and Gorokan and Wyong. I've got a song called Moonlight and Wyong.
Sounds lovely.
Tune in before the rising of the sun with your mates.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, Scott, how are you going?
Good, mate. There are a lot of people to be listening to this, and they're absolutely itching for the gun to go off for the Easter holidays, a traditional fishing time ahead for your neck of the woods, Shoal Bay, Port Stephens, Fingal Bay. It's an absolute fishing mecca, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. Probably outside Christmas, Easter would be the most popular period, especially with the weather that we've been having. I'm expecting an invasion, Scott, which happens every year, and we're welcoming. Port Stephens is very welcoming, and because that's what we do. We're a tourist region. We rely on the tourist dollar. So if you're thinking about coming to Port Stephens, I reckon it's a jolly good idea.
Stinker's put the welcome mat out. One thing we've got to mention, though, particularly for those fishers who are allowed to use witches' hats in their waters. There are so many turtles in the port that call the port home, and Dave Harasty from New South Wales DPI Fisheries and a great researcher has done so much work on tracking them. They're beautiful creatures. You cannot use those traps, can you?
No, witches hats are banned, as they in Port Stephens, and they are banned in every other state in Australia apart from New South Wales. They're a net over a bait, and the turtle goes down to get the bait, gets tangled up in the net and sadly drowns. 10 years ago, the laws were changed in Port Stephens. Working with New South Wales Fisheries, we changed the laws to ban witches' hats and to ban all traps with an entry over 32 centimetres. And since then, and that's 10 years ago, and I keep my ear pretty close to the sand, I heard the other day, 2 years ago, there was one turtle caught in a trap over at Tea Gardens. Now, that's the only one, which is a great win for tourism, great win for turtles, and really, it's a more effective way to catch crabs using a trap, and as long as it doesn't have the entry over 32 centimetres, they work very well. So everyone's still catching crabs, but they're not endangering turtles, which is great.
I like the dilly pot idea, the pot that you've got to maintain. You've got to go back to it and lift it quite regularly. You've got to actively fish it. It doesn't ghost fish if it does get cut by a propeller or something, and it's just a really great way to catch them. And of course, that type of pot, Stinker, is really safe for the turtles, and if you don't pull it up, it doesn't keep the crab trapped as well. They can take off and live another day.
Oh, certainly. You know, turtles, interestingly enough, I've been right into it recently because there's been quite a stir in Port Stephens with some reporting misinformation. That's what I would call it. But a few things we need to know is that there's a very high population of turtles in Port Stephens. This is from research carried out by Taronga, which tells us there's between 200 and 500 turtles in Port Stephens. Well, that was a bit of a shock to me, I must admit. But that's I was talking to one of the fishermen who's a professional crabber. Up the back of the harbour where he's crabbing, there are heaps of turtles, and he sees them poke their heads up all the time. They're very hard creatures to count, Scott, because they won't keep their head up long enough. And so it's a very difficult thing to do. But assuming that's an accurate number of turtles, between 200 and 500, well, we've got to protect them the best we possibly can. Now, figures that have come out there's two local newspapers here in Port Stephens, and one of the papers is really, I feel, hysterical in reporting this issue, which said 42 turtles have been killed since October. Well, that's alarming. That's alarming. And seven of those turtles were killed by boat strike. and the aim of this article was to bring a focus on jet skis. Now, there is absolutely no evidence at all that these boat strikes were caused by jet skis. I mean, I'm not a great fan of jet skis, but I don't think they should be a whipping post either. And that's exactly what they're being reported as in Port Stephens. So I don't think you can start using misrepresentation to push a point. That's my point.
Yeah, what I think was really interesting about the debate over the witches' hats killing the turtles is that I think, you know, in one year where 13 were caught in the traps and died, there were 13 pictures or more taken by the people who recovered the bodies. So there were probably more of them that weren't recovered if those traps, the witches' hats, were ghost fishing. But there was so much photographic evidence to support the people who were trying to get witches' hats out of the port. If there were 42 turtles killed by boat strike and their carcasses washing up or sitting on the clear water sandy bottom of the estuary, I'd say there'd be many, many photos of that, because every person on the water and around the water has a camera in their pocket. So are we seeing lots and lots of photographic evidence of the alleged 40 turtles that have been killed by boat strike?
No, and that's a big problem. I haven't seen photos. But now, this is where the figures are a bit rubbery, because there's a group here, a very responsible group called Sea Shelter, and they're doing their best to look after turtles. But they haven't got photos of every single turtle that's been reported. Now, they say, I've spoken to the people there, and they're very nice people, and they say that there were 34 turtles that they were notified about since October that had died, and seven of those were by boat strike, and none of those seven could be positively identified as being a jet ski. So I went and saw national parks and maritime and the marine parks, those three agencies in Port Stephens, and I went and spoke to each of them, and they reported three since October. Two were the reasons they died, they don't know, but one was from a boat strike. Now, there's a lot of gap in information here. I suggested to National Parks and to Sea Shelter to contact each other, keep in touch, send each other your figures and your photographs and who took the photographs and where the incident occurred, and then we'll get a handle on it. But another thing, Scott, is that if we had, let's take it, we had 34 turtles lost since October and seven by boat strike, what caused the death of all the others? Now, it could be virus, it could be plastic, it could be old age, who knows? But there's so much. If we got such a huge population of turtles in Port Stephens, surely we must have a better method of keeping track and keeping them safe, other than what we've got, which is absolutely nothing. We've got nothing here that gives us an accurate return of what's going on with turtles, except from witches' hats are gone, and so we don't have to worry about them. And look, our bait and tackle outlets in Port Stephens don't even sell those devices anymore. So we've solved that side of the problem, but we haven't solved this other side. It really needs hauling in. And misinformation's not the way to do it.
Stinker, you spend a lot of time on the water, probably as much as anyone around the port, in Stink Bug, the bigger boat from Little Beach when you're heading outside and in the estuary and off Fingal Bay in Stink Pot. Have you run into a turtle? Have you obviously seen plenty of them? You've ever hit one?
No, I haven't. I don't spend as much time on the water as a friend of mine, John Alisi, who's a crabber. He's a professional crabber, and he works in the back half of the harbour. And I contacted John because this is all getting a bit too much for me. And I said, John, how many have you seen up there that have been killed or dead? How many have you seen since October? He said, oh, maybe three or four probably. So he's on the water every day. But so you can see the huge difference in reporting, and there's no communication between Sea Shelter and the agencies. So that's one of the reasons why the figures are so far apart. So people down here don't know what to believe. They just don't know. But I know certain things have been said through the week, particularly blaming jet skis for something that they didn't do.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if there's some research to come out of it, and watch out for turtles, and just be wary. So that's a good message, because we love them and they don't cause any harm. They're beautiful creatures. Hey, Tight Line Stinker, thanks for joining us again on The Big Fish.
Okay, Scott.
And a very important message for all our visiting fishers. If you're heading up the coast or down to the beautiful south coast, make sure to take all of your discarded fishing line. It's a real death trap for lots of marine creatures. Just fold it up, put it in your pocket. Make sure you don't put it in the washing machine, though, and throw it in the bin. Be responsible. Coming up, a new sea creature that we're allowed to eat in New South Wales. This song might give it away.
Are worried over how they'll pay the rent, and some folks are annoyed because they can't lay up a cent. Others are perplexed about the latest picture show, but there is really only just one thing I'd like to know. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? No matter what I do, the answer won't come through. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? That's a question I would like an answer to. A little piece of cheese annoys a mouse, there is no doubt. But here's the one thing I've been trying hard to figure out. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster when an oyster's in a stew? What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? I asked them at the zoo. They said they wished they knew. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? That's a question I would like an answer to. A piece of cheese annoys the mouse annoys in turn the cat, who then annoys the dog, but still I cannot learn. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster when an oyster's in a stew? Oysters live a life within a very narrow scope. One thing I've found out is that an oyster don't like soap. I'll admit the problem's been a sticker from the go. I've asked most everyone I've met and no one seems to know. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? I figured till I'm blue, so now I'm asking you. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? That's a question I would like an answer to. A piece of cheese annoys the mouse annoys the cat annoys the dog annoys your Sunday hat. But what kind of a noise annoys an oyster when an oyster's in a stew? Oh, what kind of a noise annoys an oyster? I've asked each one I knew, from here to Kalamazoo. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? That's a question I would like an answer to. Now simple things annoy a lot of simple folks, you see. And that's most likely why this question is annoying me. But what kind of a noise annoys an oyster when an oyster's in a stew?
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And a pearler of a story for you. Do you love oysters? Do you love pearls? Well, you can have your pearl and eat it too. The Managing Director of Broken Bay Oysters, James Brown, who was the Farmer of the Year, and I've known James for a while. We jokingly said you might drown on your tractor. G'day, James.
G'day, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yes, when you did win Farmer of the Year a few years back, it really made us realise that aquaculture is a very legitimate form of farming, isn't it? A very sustainable form of farming, particularly oysters.
Yeah, that's right. doesn't often get associated with the big agricultural, production and impact in the on the nation in terms of GDP and all the rest of it. But the Sydney rock oysters, of course, is probably, if not the oldest, it's one of the oldest forms of aquaculture or agriculture in the kind of modern Australia, and even older than that when you include the indigenous use of it. So it's good to see it, I guess, finally starting to get that recognition of being a really important aspect of our, of our economy and our society.
Now, the Akoya oysters that you grow in Broken Bay, it's the only place where these are grown on the East Coast commercially to grow for pearls, but I believe you've had some great news in regards to the meat.
Yes, that's right. We had our official launch of our Akoya food products. So that is, that is now out there and will be coming to the menus around the Central Coast, hopefully, with our Akoya pearl oysters, as they are, now being completely certified, approved through the Food Authority's Quality Assurance Program, and embraced by all the local chefs. So it's very exciting to have that product now live, I guess, live in the market.
It's wonderful, isn't it, that there's no wastage. It's such a clean, green industry. All they do is filter the water and grow meat and pearls, but now to be able to eat them. Is this something that's been practiced in Japan since they started cultivating these smaller pearl oysters?
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that, as another just beautiful bivalve in the, in the marine systems, these pearl oysters and lots of other bivalves, whether it be oysters or rock oysters or pearl oysters or mussels or whatever it might be, have been eaten, I think, by the people that have interacted with them forever, whether it be, Aboriginal Australians or, First Nation people all around the world and certainly in Japan with the modern industry. And everywhere, actually, where the modern pearling industry is, if it's not commercialised, then certainly the the food side of the industry is generally consumed by the people on the farms or the local communities. So been around for a long time, but not this species, not commercialised, certainly in New South Wales. You probably remember we were working on this, and we were making good headway before the big floods came and sort of set us back a couple of years, unfortunately. But yeah, we're back on track now.
We're speaking with James Brown, the managing director of Broken Bay Pearl Oysters, and James, the big question, of course, we've got to ask you, is how do they taste?
Oh well, I guess that's the first question everyone's thinking. I don't think it's easy to explain. It's definitely one I hope that people will take on the intrigue to try it when they do see it on their local restaurants' menus. But I guess to give a sense, it's important for people to know that it's not a rock oyster. So if people think that they're going to try one of these things and it'll be somewhat similar to a Sydney rock oyster, then it's going to be very different. I think the way to think through it is that if you're familiar with what a pearl oyster looks like, they really do look more like a kind of a mussel in their shape than a rock oyster per se. And in some ways, they've got a combination of both. So they've got, beautiful kind of creaminess and mineralization that Sydney rock oysters have in the area, particularly, of course, the Empire Bay oysters and the stuff coming out of Brisbane Waters and the Hawkesbury, just incredible flavors and profiles that change through the season. Akoya will have that as well. However, it's got a little bit more texture than Sydney rock oysters and, probably more inclined for chefs to use it in different ways, whether they blanch it or they cure it or smoke it or whatever they might do. You'll probably find they won't just serve this up like you'd expect a rock oyster in a Pacific oyster, where more often than not they're sold fresh and raw. I think they'll be more versatile than that.
Of course, eating meat from pearl oysters is nothing new up at your farm in Broome, which grows South Sea pearls. with those giant flat oysters, of course, that the Japanese discovered before World War II, really. Who can forget the images of those hard hat divers battling crocodiles and grouper and giant sharks? So brave, getting the bends to pioneer that industry around Broome and the Northern Territory. Irukandji, box jellies, you name it, they sea snakes, they had to deal with it. But that's the muscle only, isn't it? It's sort of like a scallop, and it's $100 a kilo. Have you eaten a lot of that? I mean, that's obviously at the end of life, because you can seed those oysters over and over again sometimes, can't you?
Yeah, that's right. And yes, I pretty much grew up on that. Well, when it's harvest time anyway, you don't see the product unless you're harvesting. And it's very much a byproduct. And as you said, it's just the abductor muscle. The other soft tissue of that species is used by local people as well, but again, not commercialized. And there's really not much of it when you compare, it's a very small byproduct of that industry. Whereas with a koya, these beautiful little pearl oysters on the central coast, we sell the entire thing, so we don't separate it, and we only actually sell dedicated, groups of stock coming through our farm. So it'll all come out of the hatchery at the same time. It'll grow for probably a couple of years minimum, and then we'll start separating the stock, and we'll say, right, well, these carefully selected oysters will go into our seeding or our pearl production efforts, and then the others will go through into our seafood production efforts.
I was a bit excited there for a while, because when you said we'll sell the whole thing, I was thinking, boy, if they've seeded this with a pearl, but remember when we used to get a toy in the cereal box?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That'd be the greatest prize in the food item you'd ever get.
we don't think that's going to happen. We'll try very much not. But
it does does happen, James Brown. I got one from the South Coast once, which had a reasonably sized pearl in it. A Sydney rock oyster had a small pearl in it. I put it in a film canister and put it in a drawer somewhere. I can't find it, but it was a little beauty.
Well, you're right, and natural pearls do occur in rock oysters. Natural pearls occur in just about every mollusk. So yes, there will be natural pearls that come through, but I guess the reason why we know it won't be a cultured pearl or risk of that is that we will sell these things for food at sort of that 2 or 3 year mark, and it's only at that age and size that we can even start the pearl farming process. So whilst we're selling this group for food, the other group will then be started to be seeded, and they're still another 2 years away before they get harvested. So they are much older as opposed to the stock we think are the best for food. But you're right, there are and will be small natural pearls in them, a bit like any oyster. The difference with these ones will be, if people do happen to find a tiny little natural pearl, it will probably have beautiful luster, like the beautiful pearls that they produce as well, unlike the rock oyster natural pearls, which have obviously a kind of a flat white look like the shell.
Look, it's great to talk to you, James Brown. Thank you so much for joining us from down there on Broken Bay. And this is a brand new seafood experience. I'd love to try one day. I'm sure one day I'll be able to nosh into it. Now that we can officially do that, you've gone through all of the checks and balances with New South Wales DPI Fisheries to make the pearl akoya oyster, the Japanese pearl akoya oyster, which is only grown in Broken Bay commercially, available for people to taste test.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to tell the coasties. And hopefully it's something that people see a little bit more and more around over the months and years ahead.
Yes, well, I'm prepared to shell out a few bucks when I see them on the menu and try them out. Thanks for your time, James Brown.
Good on you. Cheers, mate.
It's on the Big Fish Show. You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.